dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SVC fans. This is Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. I'd like to welcome you to our sixth show here in Season 2 of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast Show. My brother Matt will join me in just a second, but as we get into the to this particular week, we want to backtrack to last week, and we want to look at the way the show ended, because it stirred up quite a conversation throughout Facebook and the inbox. And if you weren't with us, we ended last week by looking at a Facebook message that was asking us our feeling on parents refereeing their kids' game. And it made a point not to say coaching. Obviously, that's something we see quite a bit, Little League, Junior High, even to the varsity level. Heard the WKKJ scoreboard show, Justin and Lou, talking about some coaching of the kids the other night. But this is something a little bit different, because it's talking about refereeing a game in which the kid is playing. And if you miss that, not a problem. Just check out the DBK website. You want to go back to show 35. It's late in the show. Obviously, we'd love for you to listen to the whole show, but if you're just wanting to catch up on this topic, you just slide the bar across. It's over in the last 10, 15 minutes. And Matt and I made several comments and kind of given some of our opinions on that. So again, you can go back there and listen and kind of catch up. But some follow-up, Matt, this week, I wanted to read a couple to you, and then as you join us here, kind of get a response. The follow-up this week, several examples. Here's one that really jumped out at me, and it was kind of a long one. I'll just kind of summarize it here, but it happened in the sport of soccer. And we basically had a parent who, this was at the varsity level, had a parent involved in officiating a match, and there was a red card involved, and just a lot of frustration with the program and some of the parents and the kids. And it just kind of turned into what, from the way it was described to me, kind of a bad situation. And I just wanted to throw out some information here, Matt, to give you some all the knowledge before you give your opinion. Is my understanding that it was a late a situation where it's getting to the morning of the match, and the away school needed an official, contacted this official. The official did let them know, I have a kid on the team, and they basically said that, you know, we're okay with it if you are. And the parent ended up officiating, and as I said, that there was some different things that happen. I guess, Matt, just you've had a week to step back and listen to some of the response of people who listen to the show and read some of the different things. I guess just what's your initial reaction to this, and then we'll throw some different examples out there and talk about it a little bit more.
Well, again, like I said last week, I can't imagine as a parent I would want to be put in that situation. You know, I do respect the fact that the guy was honest with the school, you know, and let him know up front, didn't just try to slide in that way. But at the same time, if I was an official or a parent or whichever way you want to look at it, I wouldn't want to be. It's already a tough enough job without being put into a compromising situation. So I wouldn't have liked that. But you know, from the school standpoint, I understand how it gets. Sometimes you get to the you know, you have a cancellation with the official, you get in a tough spot, it's embarrassing, you're afraid you're going to have a game and nobody to referee, umpire, whatever the case may be. So you get a little desperate and you just think, okay, we'll just go with it. Hopefully nothing will happen. Surely nothing will happen. And then something happens, you know, so it's tough. It's, you know, you hate to just criticize the parties involved when it doesn't go right, but at the same time, you know, it's just a bad situation to put yourself into both ways.
Well, I agree. I know I've been an athletic administration myself, and I know when holding that position, there would be several times you'd be teaching in class and you'd get a phone call in the middle of the day, and within 4 or 5 hours, you may have to have a volleyball official for a 5 o'clock start or something like that. So I understand that these things do sneak up on you. But I tell you what, I don't know that there is a perfect answer here, but I think that the one thing from last week's show to this week's show that we agree on is just these situations really have to be avoided, especially at the higher levels of sports when you get into the high school level. I know some other things, Matt, in the inbox and Facebook. One person saying that they saw a situation earlier this year where a football official was leaving a room, had a shirt on of that particular school and was walking with a player, and some fans from the other school saw this and had become very upset. Another example in a Facebook message, or excuse me, that was a Facebook message. Another example in the inbox, admin1 at svcsportzone.com says that they once saw a basketball example where the referee was out there and they were looking really closely, and as they walked down toward the front row, they noticed that he was wearing the team shoe of the home team. And that upset him a little bit. So when I read some of these things, I do think there's some honest mistakes sometimes that are being made. Like, for example, on the basketball show, I've seen an example before where an official shows up. Hey, I've just come 45 minutes away. I forgot my shoes. And they're scrambling around asking JV players, what size shoe do you wear? Give me some tennis shoes, that type of thing. Obviously, that's not a good thing to be out, you know, reffing a basketball game in the team shoe of the home school.
Maybe he like that shoe. Maybe he bought it off eBay. You never know.
You know, and as far as the other thing, I will say this, Matt, and I'm interested to get your point on this. We do live, I've heard you talk a lot about the SVC in this way. It's such a close conference geography-wise. And for the exception of maybe going up to Westfall every now and then and getting some officials out of the Central District, most of the time you go from an SVC school to an SVC school, you're going to see familiar faces. And someone who's lived in the Ross County area for 20, 30, 40 years, they're going to have ties to a lot of different schools. Like, I know I'm only 35 years old. I graduate from Uniota. I work at Paint Valley. I have family in the Huntington District and live over here in the Huntington District. So I have 3-4 different schools that someone might tie me to depending on how they know me. And obviously someone who's 10-15 years older than me, that would even be more so. But I just think that it goes back to the professionalism thing and really almost protecting yourself, the kids, and the schools involved by handling these situations. If you are in a situation, you know, you don't have to show up there and be buddy-buddy with everybody. You show up and kind of do a job and leave, and most officials do. So again, I'm not picking on officials. But Matt, the one thing I wanted to get from you, do you feel, and I want to be careful how I word this because I don't want to come across the wrong way toward officials, but you know, coaches obviously have a lot of people that they answer to. Who would you say the officials answer to, and do you think sometimes that puts them both in a fair and unfair light?
Yeah, I think accountability is an issue. When you ask me the question, who officials answer to, I'm not sure of that answer. I don't know that there is somebody. Now, if officials do something like break a contract, or if they would do something really unethical on the floor that was noticed or, you know, caught on film and they got reported or something, then obviously the OHSA may get involved. But outside of that, quite frankly, I don't know. You know, the level of accountability for the officials is basically – coaches vote for them in tournament selection. So, you know, if an official consistently doesn't do a good job, you would think that he or she wouldn't get votes for the tournament.
Sure.
I guess you don't have to hire them. So that's the accountability from your side as an athletic administrator or a school. You know, if you've had problems with an official, you wouldn't hire them. You'd have that choice, but you still may get them on the road, obviously. Of course, in the SVC, they have an assigner, don't they, for some sports? I don't know how many sports do they have an assigner for, Shane? I know they do it in basketball.
I'm pretty sure for all the round-robin sports in terms of basketball, football, baseball, softball, volleyball, so pretty much all of them.
But obviously, I mean, the accountability is obviously higher on coaches. I think most officials would probably even agree with that. Obviously, when you're teacher, which a lot of coaches are, or you're working with kids, not only do you have to go through a extensive, you know, background check, sports medicine training, take the coaching and fundamentals class, there's a lot, you've got a couple hundred bucks wrapped up in it, you got a lot of time wrapped up in it, And then obviously, you know, you have parents to deal with and administration to deal with. So, you know, I think that's comparing apples and oranges. But in terms of officials' accountability, I think, again, it's mainly, I guess, supposed to be a checks and balances situation where the coaches rate the officials, the schools rate the officials, and that's really their level of accountability, I think.
Well, Matt, I think you did a good job explaining that, and I hope to the fan who had sent that into the inbox, that answers your question. I know, again, they weren't in any way complaining or attacking officials. They were simply wanting to educate themselves on that in terms of what happens. And, yeah, I know as someone who's played and then coached, been involved in SVC sports over the last 20 years or so, obviously we have some really, really good officials, and most of the time these things that we're talking about are not the case. So it makes for interesting topics, but I do know that we have some great officials in the league, and more times than not, these situations are going to be avoided. You can go to the inbox, admin1@svcsportzone.com, Facebook, I have svcsportzone.com, and I have a Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone, or Twitter, SVC Sports Zone, and let us know your thoughts on any of these particular topics throughout the week, and we'll share them here on the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. This conversation is just the start of another great show, so stay with us. We have more pet peeves to talk about. One sport that has reached the postseason and plenty of SVC football. But first, have any of our listeners decided who the POY is in volleyball? We talk volleyball on the other side of the break.
Never miss an episode. Just go to the DBK Media Services website. To one of our episodes, enter your valid email address in the blank to the left of the subscribe button, and then check your email in a few moments for a validation email containing a confirmation link. Click on it and sit back to wait for an email informing you of our next episode.
Fans, we turn our attention to volleyball, and Westfall comes back to beat Zane Trace in five. So the gold ball chance for Zane Trace is stopped there. And on that same night, Huntington lets a golden opportunity slip away. As Westfall's coming back behind the great play of Olivia Cobb and Hannah Phillips, I think the two of them combined for 40 kills, and Westfall's size at the net, just a huge factor in that comeback. Kayla Tackett in the back row, 35 digs that night. We have some really good libero play in the league this year. Obviously, we know how good Elena Lida was at Huntington, and Emily Ward there at Uniota does a great job. I know Uniota asks a lot of their libero and some of their rotations and serve receive and defensively, and just some really good play in the back row this year. But on that same night, Huntington lets a golden opportunity slip. They are tied one set each. They go up 12-3 in the third set. Adina makes a little bit of a run. Huntington goes up 24-19. Looks as if they have won the set to go up 2-1. There's a net violation that takes the point away, and to be quite frank, Huntington just didn't handle it very well. That ends up being the first of six set points that Adina would survive. Adina wins that third set 27-25, goes on to win the match in four. And I just thought Adina's defense was outstanding that night. Jenny Grigsby, a four-year starter for the Two Shade Blue, had 30 digs that night. She was tremendous. Kennedy gives them a great presence in the middle at the net. Dawson is one of the great newcomers, their setter this year. She's had a great year. Carly Bauer and Skaggs. And that's just a really nice effort from Adina. And what that does to the league standings is put Zane Trace with one loss, with Huntington, Westfall, and Adina all two back. So it leaves us playing the if game. And I know we all love the if game when we talk sports. But basically, here it is. If Huntington can beat Zane Trace, we could have an incredible 14th date to the league season this year, Matt, because what's going to happen is on October the 11th, when I look at the Embroid Me schedule, and again, Embroid Me of Chillicothe, SVC fans, 774-7400 for all your SVC apparel needs. But when I look at the Embroid Me schedule, it shows me that on Thursday, October 11th, we would get back to the rematch of our preview matchups. We'd have Westfall at Huntington. We'd have Zane Trace going out to Frankfurt, and we could really, really have an amazing finish. Now, keep in mind, Uniota will have a chance to spoil for all three of these teams because Uniota still plays Huntington, Westfall, and Adina. So there's still a lot of volleyball to play. And I guess it brings me back to Zane Trace. And Matt, we talk chemistry a lot on the show. And to me, there's a couple different types of chemistry. When I think of Zane Trace and I think of Haley Carl and Delaney Spetnagel and Kylan Strasbaugh, they're all around ability to play both the front row and the back row. And it really solidifies the rotation. And you have that chemistry on the court in terms of knowing who's to your left, who's to your right in every rotation, and you kind of know how that kid's going to react. I think that makes a big difference. And I was looking at the Adena Sports Medicine SVC leaders. And again, SVC fans, you'll find that right there on the homepage. Just look under the volleyball. You'll see stats, and you'll go and you'll see a real nice page. It's the Adena Sports Medicine, the official sponsor of SVC stats. Listening to your coach is one thing. Listening to your pain is everything. Again, Adena Sports Medicine, official sponsor of our stat page. Check it out. And you're going to notice in kills and digs that Carl Spetnagel and Strasbaugh, three really good all-around players. And Matt, you've talked chemistry on a different side. You said that you kind of believed that it was going to be tough to win the gold, which we find out's true. But we're talking, how would Zane Trace, facing adversity, how would they handle it? And they come back in their next match with Uniota, and they win in four. And, you know, barring an upset now against one of the bottom three teams in the league, Zane Trace is all but wrapped up at least a share of the league. How would you say that they responded to that adversity?
Well, they responded how they responded most times this year, which is well. I think you learn a lot about your team when they go through a little bit of a rough stretch, which I guess if you losing a game, being a rough stretch, whatever. But, you know, it's a sign of maturity, I think, on their team. Some young ladies that have been through it a little bit before. And then it's a sign of a well-coached team because, you know, the coach has a lot to do with trying to hold that team together after a tough loss too. So they responded well. They bounced back. Like you said, they put themselves in a great position to at least get a share. I know they want more than that. But we talked at the beginning of the season, volleyball is going to be interesting. And like you said, if a couple games shake out the right way, it could be real interesting coming down the stretch.
No doubt about that. Now, fans, later on, you know, if you're familiar with the show, that we always take one final look into the inbox. And tonight, when we do that, we will be looking at the player of the year, and Matt and I will give you our thoughts on what's shaping up to be a really neat discussion in terms of who the top player in this year's SVC Volleyball League would be. Now, for now, we've been talking pet peeves, and fans, you really need to stay with us because Matt was reminded this week of some pet peeves that he failed to mention last week.
If you're an iPhone, iPad, or iPod user, you can use Apple's iTunes to subscribe to our podcast. Just search SVC Sports Talk on iTunes and hit the subscribe button.
Matt, this is a kind of an entertaining part of the show here because a couple people that we know quite well getting involved in the show, one being Jeremy Ward, of course, SVC fans will know, joins us in the spring, does a great job with our softball coverage. And he's reminding you, Matt, that one of the pet peeves that you failed to mention last week is the baseball coaches wearing uniforms. And I think there's a little bit more of an inside joke you're going to have to let us in on there. And then another person, Terry Hill, tells us that the dress of high school student athletes, and he goes into detail about the headband and thanks LeBron in parentheses there and a lot of different things there. So talk a little bit about the coaches wearing uniforms as well as some of the student athletes' choice of attire during the game.
Well, I think Jeremy's trying to pull a funny on me. We used to coach baseball together. He was the head coach, and I helped him out. Or maybe hurt him, one or the other, but I was on the staff. And we had a opening game down at Waterford. Anybody that knows where Waterford's at knows it's, you know, a long way away from everywhere. But we get down there, and we had, you know, our new uniforms or something wasn't in. I can't remember exactly the situation, but I had to, you know, had to give up my part of my uniform, you know, so that we could dress an extra kid because we didn't have enough. And, you know, it's about 32 degrees, and It's a miserable day, and of course, you know, I wasn't in full uniform, but we were in heavy coats and everything else, and the umpire wasn't going to let me coach first base after going all the way down there, and it sparked a bit of an argument, and finally, you know, I think common sense prevailed, and we were all able to go about and do our job. But it's one of those things where it is a rule, I believe, where coaches are supposed to be in uniform. But at the high school level, you see a little bit of everything sometimes. And like with the kids, the way they dress and stuff, it's you know, some coaches do a better job than others at trying to keep their kids more uniform. And some teams, you see a little bit of a smorgasbord of dress. So, but yeah, I was reminded of a few pet peeves, and it's fun to listen to some guys. One of my buddies told me the old first to third move in baseball was his pet peeve, and I have to agree with that. That is just silly, and I think they're going to actually do
away
with that. I believe
they are. This is
not
the last
be able
year
to do that. So
right.
But it's fun to, you know, some of the show last week, some of my friends said, "Oh, you forgot this. You forgot this." So there's a lot of them out there.
Well, I know from when I first started coaching, you know, I was in decent shape still or whatever, so putting the uniform on didn't bother me. But 10 years and about 50 pounds later, sometimes, you know, you go to coach baseball.
Oh, yeah.
The uniform's not the most flattering thing. So I did come up with a couple things. Some people told me that they can't handle the hats of teams coming in the different collar, for example, like the red Yankees hat. The different things there, they said that bothered them. I had one response this week, but here's one that's interesting, Matt. I want to know, are you buying this? A couple emails not very happy with my attack on volleyball last week, and it talks about the sportsmanship and celebrating with teammates. It says that you're celebrating enjoy with your own teammates, that there's no taunting going on, that we were extremely unfair to the sport of volleyball. So Matt, when you hear that the predetermined chant is not taunting, are you okay with this? Are you buying this?
Well, you know, to an extent I'm buying it in volleyball simply because it's the way it's always been. You know what I mean? I really doubt that the other team in volleyball takes any offense to it because they know that's just the way it is. They do it too or whatever, you know. I think our point was you try that in another sport, you know, and there's going to be an issue. But I think it's been accepted for whatever reason in volleyball. It's just a unique thing because you just don't see it in other sports. But no, in volleyball, I doubt that anyone's considering it that because that's the way it's always been.
Well, I know that, I guess my take on this stuff's always been, I like pure emotion. I think the predetermined part is what kind of takes the honesty out of it. Like when I was watching the Ryder Cup yesterday, you know, the pure emotion of just the moment getting a hold of you and you reacting. And speaking of the Ryder Cup, here's a pet peeve of mine too. I don't even know if this has anything to do with high school sports, but maybe a little bit. I don't understand how people could root for the other team, like Europe. You see what I'm saying? Like right. I'm hearing people today say, "Oh, that was incredible golf. That was a great finish." And yeah, I don't get that. Like, you know, if Rory's your favorite player and you want him to win the Masters, that's one thing. But when he's playing against the United States, that's something I just don't get. My some of my friends and I argued about that today at school. But speaking of golf, Matt, I want to transition over to golf. With the Uniota boys and Westfall girls winning the sectional title. And I can also tell you that I've just been told that the Westfall girls finished second today. This is being Monday when we're recording the show, that they finished second and they'll be heading back to the state. So congratulations to the Westfall girls. Honestly, looking at some of the scores, they didn't play up to their capability today, but the second place finish, still plenty good enough. Huntington, Shania Irvin had qualified individually for the district. She, unfortunately, today was one shot off the pace. 81 was the final individual score. She shot 82. I believe it was a 40-42 or 42-40. I don't have that in front of me. But she fails by one shot. But Shania, just a junior, will have one more crack at it next year. Really good player there at Huntington. So I hated to hear that. And then on the boys' side, we have Andrew Potensky of Westfall, that's an all-league golfer from the SVC, and then Adina's Peyton Cooper on a day where conditions were pretty tough and some of our other all-league individuals didn't fare well. Dean is Peyton Cooper qualified, and I believe Peyton is shipped off a little bit separately by himself. There was a little bit of a mix-up. The one part of the website had them going to Apple Valley up in Knox County, but I believe now, I tried to research it before the show, Cumberland Trail Golf Course, and Matt, you might have to help me here. I believe that's in the Pataskala area, and I think he's a 10:28 tee time Tuesday morning. He'll go off at number 10, and I was trying to pull up the scorecard just to get a feel. I have no idea what kind of tees they play, but depending on the tees, they could go anywhere 6,400 to 7,200. So that's a fairly decent sized course. Matt, I don't know that you've played that course before. Have you heard much about it?
Never played it. I heard some good things about it. I guess it's a really nice course. I think it's a fairly difficult course, like you said, depending on the tee boxes. To give people an idea, if you play the blue tees at JC's, you're looking at about 6,800 yards. So if, you know, when you gave those numbers there, that gives you a little idea of the length. Sure. Anybody that's played JC's from the blues knows it's a pretty long golf course. So if they set that golf course up somewhere in that 6,700, 6,800 yard range, it's a pretty long course. I think it's pretty hilly, if I'm being told right by other people. I've had a couple of friends play it. So it'll be a real challenge, I'm sure, which at that level, that's what you want. You want a golf course that challenges people. So,
well, he's obviously as an individual there, so you get the four low scores out, not counting those on the four teams. So obviously we'd love to see him play well and go to the state, but just the experience of getting to play that great golf course, again, talking just a freshman there in the Cooper kid from Edina. So best of luck to him, and I'm sure regardless of what happens, he's going to benefit from that in the future. And then obviously Uniota Boys, very capable. Uniota Boys trying to go to the state as a team, and if for some reason they're unable to, obviously have some players there at the top of their lineup capable of qualifying. But I know, no doubt, Coach Drummond wanting to get that team to the state level. Yeah, Matt, based on what you've seen all year, how do you think the SVC will do at the district level?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell because it's that one given day in golf. If you put together a nice round, then, you know, sometimes that's all it takes. I think, you know, Uniota, we've talked about their depth. And I think late in the year, their depth maybe suffered a little bit. I noticed they had a couple guys struggling. It's hard, you know, you never know what's going on, sickness, injury, maybe just not playing real well at the time. If they can get it clicking, you know, and they can get all four guys, or four of their five guys, I guess, playing really well, you know, you never know. So you get to this level, though, and there's not a lot of room for error. You really can't afford to only put three scores out there unless you have a couple really low numbers. You really have to have four guys. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how it goes. Golf's a funny game, so it's kind of hard to predict, really.
Well, you make a great point with depth. I mean, it starts with Forkham and Calvin there at the top, and then posting nice scores. So much of throughout the SVC dynasty, it's been the six scores and getting four to count in the tournament. We've documented this on the show several times. You cut it down to five, and I think it does put a little bit more pressure on those top guys to play well, but very capable. Look forward to talking about that on next week's show, and hopefully we're talking already about Westfall girls going to the state. Hopefully we're talking about Uniota boys doing the same, and again, some of our individuals as well. So as I transition to some other sports, SVC fans, you'll look on the side of our homepage at svcsportzone.com. You'll see the icons of each sport. Just click on it. You'll notice with soccer that Zane Trace and Uniota girls continuing to have solid seasons. They played really well this past week. The Uniota boys stay undefeated. And individually, we have some soccer players having a nice year. You're going to want to read down through that page. I know Sydney Johnson doing a nice job distributing the ball for Zane Trace. Megan Jawanicorn having a great year. I know Brooke Urig's had some really key penalty kicks the last couple weeks. Casey Zupich of Uniota with a 5-goal performance here recently, so you'll want to read about that. He's getting a lot of votes in our Herbie Strange Athlete of the Week that we release usually about the midweek. So we appreciate Herbie Strange and his support there, State Farm Insurance. But he's obviously, Casey had an incredible performance there. And then in cross country, the big thing this past week for our SVC athletes was the Piketon invite. Uniota boys, Zane Trace girls, continue to roll individually. I know it looks like Prohl and Richter continuing to do really well. You can click on the link there. You can go junior high. You can go boys girls race. And what's so intriguing about those times, and we're going to be talking about this more on next week's show, Piketon, I believe, is the location of this year's SVC meet. So hope to have a coach or two on next week talking a little bit about that course, and you'll be able to look at those times and maybe start to rank a little bit on what the all-league team is going to look like in cross country. So fans, we have some great football talk this week. If you will stay with us, Matt and I will predict the four winners this week, and I will tell you why Paint Valley helped me answer some questions this past week, but forced me to ask a few more.
Just remember, you can get SVC Sports Zone updates throughout the week. Just follow us on Twitter at SVC Sports Zone.
Matt, we look back at this past week of football. We see that Edina rolls easy, as they most probably predicted them to do so. Big night for Wells, I believe over 200 yards, four touchdowns. Westfall pulled away late from Paint Valley. Paint Valley defense, really good showing, did a great job of containing Williamson and that Westfall offense. I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. But Salmon and scores twice on the ground. Nice defensive effort from the Mustangs. Piketon beat Zane Trace. Isaac Brapson, four touchdowns, four different receivers. I don't have that in front of me. I believe it was Royster, Ferguson, Williams, and Farmer. If I have those names wrong, I apologize, but I believe that's correct. But Brapson with four touchdowns. And then Bryce Vickers of Huntington accounts for four touchdowns, three through the air, one on the ground. It seems like Huntington's involved in an SVC Instant Classic every Friday night. They edge out Uniota. Cheney and Dyer continuing to make great plays for that offense. And then Jake Kello with a clinching interception. So sounds like an exciting finish over there at Uniota High School. Matt, when you look at all the craziness and some of the great individual performances, give me your reaction from this past week in football.
Well, a couple things that were interesting. You know, Huntington bouncing back. You know, a team that has not had a lot of success in the past. They're having a good year. You know, you just wonder how they react to winning and losing. And they bounce back, get a big win, I thought. And, you know, the Piketon-Zane Trace game, I think we talked about being one of those games to see kind of which style won out. Looks like, and Piketon was able to prevail there. So a couple interesting games there, and then it sets the table. I know we'll talk here in a little bit about next week's games, but it kind of sets the table for that. I think Paint Valley's defense, like you said, showed some signs. I mean, they're obviously a solid defense, but Westfall's just so good offensively, it's hard to contain them for four quarters. So good week of SVC football, and most likely, if it's, you know, the way this league goes, probably another good week coming up.
I want to return, Matt, to the Westfall Paint Valley game. I thought this was really intriguing. I knew Paint Valley's defense, and when I look at the Edina Sports Medicine stats for football, I mentioned earlier for volleyball, you can find the football stats as well. Just look for the football on the left side of our homepage. You'll see football stats underneath that. I knew coming in with Paint Valley's defense being the top in the league there, I believe it just under 13 a game. And they certainly didn't do a whole lot to hurt that number against a great offense in Westfall. I knew they were going to do a good job. Coach Cooper and his bunch were going to do a good job of trying to take something away from Westfall and force them to do just one or two things. And in doing so, I knew we were going to find out, could Westfall's defense and run game find a way to win games? And I guess in this particular instance, it was a tight one all the way down to the last 6-7 minutes. But Westfall's run game does break loose, and Westfall's defense comes up with a big fourth down stop. But I wanted to look at Trent Williamson. I'd had some people earlier in the year asking me if I thought he was okay physically, and I didn't think much of it. I had a couple different football people that I really respect telling me that they thought that, you know, maybe he wasn't running quite as much or quite as well. And Matt, I was looking at the Edina Sports Medicine. I went back to last year and looked. You know, here's a guy that was over 1,100 yards on the ground last year. And this year, still very good numbers for a quarterback. But I noticed the other night he didn't really do a lot of running either. His attempts seemed to be down. And maybe not extending plays. So, again, I'm not taking anything away from Paint Valley's defense. I unofficially had him 3 of 20 through the air the other night. But I just wonder, and obviously I don't know how many people are using SVC Sports Talk as their scouting report, but I just wonder sometimes, Matt, when you get an athlete that's playing through an injury, how that sometimes as a coach has to affect the way you go about calling the game or what you're asking that athlete to do.
Well, yeah, obviously, if you've got a kid that's as key a player as he is for them, and if there is any sort of hint of an injury or just a nagging thing, you're going to try to protect him as much as possible, you know, because he's still talented enough to hurt teams in other ways. And, you know, you just don't want to, you know, and again, we're assuming a lot here. We don't really know anything. But if that would be the case, you just don't want to subject him to too much punishment. You know, it's kind of like the old Ohio State thing where Urban Meyer was talking about. He doesn't want, you know, Braxton Miller running 27 times a game. There's a reason don't want your quarterback getting hit that many times. But you never know. And part of it might just be his game has evolved to where he's staying in the pocket a little bit more. He's trying to make plays with the arm and maybe not just resorting to taking off so much. So, you know, teams are trying to get better the whole year because they know as they go on, they're not going to be able to depend on just one thing. I know Westfall's surely got their sights set on postseason, and they know at that level you're going to have to be able to do multiple things. So it could be a number of reasons why that stat's the way it is. Stats can be misleading sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you, when you look at the Adena Sports Medicine, one of the things that'll jump out at you is down in the receiving. Westfall has 5 kids, I believe, that are, in terms of yards per reception, 5 kids that are averaging double figures, including 2 up in the upper 20s. So obviously very explosive. So 2 things there. Obviously not trying to just start an injury rumor. We base everything on SVC Sports Talk in terms of what the fans kind of want. I've had several people asking me, you know, as I watched him, what my opinion was, and that's what I'm giving is just my opinion for whatever it's worth. And at the same time, you got to give a lot of credit to Paint Valley. This is a team that really locked up some guys on the outside and really made some tight windows, and you mix in some drops and some different things. And I thought Paint Valley was outstanding the other night. So week 7, the Embroid Me schedule, 774-7400. Again, Embroid Me at Chillicothe for all your SVC apparel needs. Call in there. They'll take care of you. And when I look at the Embroid Me schedule for week 7, I see Adena, Paint Valley, Westfall, Southeastern, Huntington, Zane Trace, and Unita Piketon. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun breaking these down, and Matt, we're going to do so in our C&K athletic equipment. Fans, throughout the year, we take a few minutes every week to take on some rapid-fire questioning. This week, we return to predicting the upcoming Friday night. So, Matt, on that note, let's take a look at the Week 7 matchups.
Adena at Paint Valley.
Well, I think it's one of the more interesting matchups of the week. Both teams have had their issues at times this year on the negative side, but both teams have had some quality wins and some momentum. So Adena seems to be playing pretty well right at the moment. Paint Valley, you know, had a couple tough games here of late. It's going to be an interesting matchup. I guess if I had to pick one here, I'm going to go Adena, even on the road, just because they seem to have a little bit more momentum right now. But this game could go either way.
Well, I think these two teams mirror each other. I think it's going to be a really close one. It's going to be homecoming night out in Bainbridge. A couple neat side notes in this game. Coach Cooper on the defensive side of the ball from Paint Valley was with Adena last year. Coach Gallagher over at Adena now was the defensive coordinator at Paint Valley and even served a little bit as a head coach when Coach Holland was going through some health issues. So obviously there's not a lot of secrets here. The two sides are going to know each other. They're going to try to win it with defense and run game. I think the difference in this game from watching both of these teams play in person could be special teams. And on that note, I think I'm going to go in a tight one with Paint Valley.
Huntington at Zane Trace.
Well, you know, I've kind of been on the Huntington bandwagon. I saw them play in a scrimmage early in the year. I kind of like their the wide open approach. And, you know, they seemed to bounce back last week and got a big win. So I'm going to go with Huntington here. Zane Trace, obviously, seems to be a solid, well-coached football team. I think Huntington's, I guess I'm picking offense over defense maybe, and going with Huntsman here.
I really struggled with this game too, but as I said a couple weeks back, that I was going to take a back corner seat on the Huntington bandwagon and just kind of wait and see. And as the weeks go on, I tell you what, I kind of start to excuse myself more comfortably to the middle. I just like the Huntington offense. As you said, Zane Trey's so well coached. They're going to do some nice things in the running game and defensively, but in the end, I just think Vickers and the offense are going to find a way to simply outscore the Pioneers.
Unioto at Piketon.
Well, it's Unioto, another tough matchup for them. They've got to go back on the road now after a tough loss and go to a really good Piketon team. Piketon, seems to play well at home. They've got a really good offense. They've got a big defensive front. So I'll go with the Red Streaks in this one.
Matt, I totally agree with you. You're the one that sold me on the Piketon defensive front clear back in the first couple weeks. And a couple weeks ago, I had a chance to watch Piketon down on field level, and they're just a really physical defense up front. They do a good job of disrupting things in the backfield. I think they're going to make it tough on Unioto to get some of the run game going. Brapson and the balance on offense, though. The one thing, the Unioto defense seems a way to impact the game every week. I do think turnovers could be a factor here, but if Piketon takes care of the football, I like the Red Streaks.
Westfall at Southeastern.
Well, it's got to be Westfall. I think Southeastern's a young team, and I've listened to Coach Coy talk a few times. It seems like they'll put together a pretty good quarter here and there. They just aren't being able to put together four quarters, and it's awfully difficult to put together four quarters, especially on the defensive side of the ball against Westfall. So I'm going to go with the Mustangs.
Well, obviously this is a mismatch on paper. Westfall, the offense will probably roll in terms of the final score. I agree with what you're saying, Matt. I think Southeastern reminds me a little bit of last year's Huntington team, wanting to try to put together little steps, little quarters here and there, putting together some drives early in the game, using Dylan Miles' ability to kick to maybe get some points on the board. So I think, yeah, definitely taking some short-term goals for Southeastern, but in terms of the four-quarter final score, I think Westfall will roll. Fans, Matt and I always enjoy hearing from you, and we enjoy hearing from fans all over Southern Ohio. I know SEO Preps has given us a lot of information for our show, SEO NEK Preps, really a large listening area. And we hope that it grows even more now with J.J. Huddle. I know over the last year or so, J.J. Huddle's really supported the show. They put a link on their website and allow us to do a lot of conversation stuff on their forum. So appreciate all of their help. And getting feedback from not just from the SVC people, but from all over Southern Ohio. Well, Matt, as we always like to do, and we promised earlier in the volleyball section we would do this, do you have the inbox email there that was talking SVC volleyball?
Yeah, Shane, I got it right here. It says, Shane, I know how you watch a lot of volleyball, and if I'm not mistaken, you were at the Huntington-Westfall match a few weeks back. I was wondering who you thought was the front runner for Player of the Year in volleyball. Is it just Kello Cobb debate, or are there others involved? Thanks for considering my email for SVC Sports Talk. I love the show. Never miss one.
Well, this is a great question, and I realize that you have to get through the 14-game schedule to really name one. But it's never too early for people like us just to sit and talk sports, especially SVC sports. I guess when I look at this, if you're asking me if I think Kello and Cobb are the two best players, two best talents in the league, I would have to say absolutely. But I think there's more to it that goes into Player of the Year. And I think just to dismiss a Haley Carl of Zane Trace would be a little bit unfair. I mean, here's a kid that has her team 16-1, I believe it is, overall, two-game lead. And her leadership, I think, has just been tremendous. If I guess I watch sports a little bit differently because I always watch it through the eyes as a coach, and I just watch players and the way they treat their teammates, the way they treat their JV program teammates, the way they treat their coaching staff, their work ethic. And her leadership has been tremendous, I think, this year. And that's not to say there aren't other good leaders on Zane Trace, because there obviously are several great attitudes. But if you don't think this is important, I'm going to guess you've never played on a good team at the high school level, and I'll guarantee you've never coached. I just think with Zane Trace's balance, it's probably what hurts Haley a little bit. We mentioned Spatnagel, we mentioned Straw's ball. You have the two setters in Pontius and Tillis, and Chaffin's come on strong. I know Ward had a great night at the net in the Unioto win. So obviously the balance is probably what a lot of coaches will point to. But I think for Carl not to least be in the discussion would be unfair. So that brings me back to the two obvious choices of Kello and Cobb, and I can't disagree with those two being the most talented. I guess when I look at Cobb, to use a baseball analogy, she's kind of the home run hitter. She's that person, you know, we always talk out at the batting cage that when certain people get in the cage, you don't even have to be looking. You could be looking away, and it just sounds different off of their bat. She's kind of like that. I mean, you're talking about an extremely powerful hitter. Her talent level, she does things like any other player in the league. If you watch her play, you'll see her do three or four things that no other player in the league has the ability to do. Now, the knock on her would probably be her efficiency. Oftentimes in big matches and in key situations of matches, she won't always hit for the high percentage, hit a ball long, hit a ball out, maybe tries to do too much. She is so talented that sometimes she probably tries to do too much instead of just making the simple play. But all in all, can't argue with her just being the best talent in the league. As for Jackie Kello of Huntington, what an incredible talent. She has a lot of those same characteristics I just mentioned with Cobb. Her back row and play has improved. One of the knocks on her coming into the year is I wanted to see her show up every night regardless of the level of competition. I thought sometimes last year she played to the level of her competition and she got her team in a couple 4 and 5 set matches that they didn't need to be in. To her credit, that has not happened this year. She's been outstanding all the way through. And if you look at I've had this discussion with some people. Some people say, well, she plays with an awfully good setter. I can't argue that. Haley Ingram's probably the best setter in the league this year, but should Kello be punished for that? I don't think so. So it's a great debate. I think it would be unfair to just name the player of the year with 4 matches still to play. But I do think that Carl deserves to be in the discussion. But I think Cobb and Kello are probably right there, too close to call. Keep in mind they still play head to head, and there's still a lot to determine in the standings. Now, Matt, where I want to bring you into this conversation is I know you don't get to watch as much SVC volleyball as I do, but I just wanted to, but it's kind of perfect for this scenario because not really knowing the skill sets or knowing the players as well, I just want you to completely put your coaching hat on and answer this question for me. How much does a player being on a league champion influence your vote when it comes to player of the year or deciding between first and second team or second and third team or certain honorable mention vote? How much does their team's position in the league standings influence you?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Shane. I everybody's got a different opinion on this in the coaching fraternity. I've never really allowed it to make much of an influence on me. I try to look at the kids individually because this is – when you start talking all league, it's an individual award. And I don't really bring that into it in my mind too much in terms of where they finish or, you know, do they win the league? But there are a lot of coaches that firmly believe that the player of the year should come off the league championship team. I'm not going to say one's right, one's wrong. It's just a matter of opinion, you know. But again, for me, I like to look at, you know, that individual player's performance. And a lot of times as a coach, when I'm in that room voting, it's more eye test for me. It's not just the stat sheet, you know. It's which player did I have the hardest time game planning against? Which player, was the most difficult player to play against? Those are the types of things I try to look at. And when I vote, now this year in volleyball, it may come down to who wins the league, though, because this league is so balanced. You know what I mean? That might be the deciding factor of, we had 3 or 4 teams here that had legitimate chances to win this league when the season started in a lot of people's minds.
Maybe 5.
Yeah, you're right. Well, yeah, you're probably right. And so you take 5 teams and someone rises to the top. Do you give a player from that team the nod? But the other side of that is that team that wins the league, do they have 2 or 3 players that are all equally good?
Sure. You know? You could definitely make that argument here.
Right. And maybe another team has one that without a question stands out. There's just a lot of things that go into it, you know.
But real quick, let me ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I totally understand where you're coming from there. Let me ask you this maybe a different way. When you say you're using the eye test and you're just watching them and how they impact the game, how much do the intangibles play a role in evaluating a player when it comes to an all-league type of honor?
Well, I think it probably comes into play because – as coaches, I think we look at those things a lot. I think coaches realize how important those little things are. You know, I've had kids before that I've voted from other teams that when I watched them play, I just thought to myself, man, I'd really like to have this kid for this reason. You know, not just because he's talented, because he really does a couple things, you know, that go unnoticed but really help his team. And I just really respected those little things that he did. So yeah, I think those things come into play. At least for me, they come into play. Again, the issue is when you get in these rooms of vote, every coach has their own sort of mental criteria, you know, for what it should be. And I know some very, very good coaches. I'm not going to get into names, but I know some legendary type coaches that truly believe your player of the year should come off the league championship team. So it's not just, you know, it's not just some rum-dum coaches feel that way. You know, right. I mean, you're talking some really, really good coaches. And I know some really, really good coaches that feel the way I feel, which is, you know, I think it should be the best player regardless of the team success. So, again, it's everybody has their own opinion. That's the way it is. That's the way it should be. That's the way, you know, you vote based on how you feel. And then let the thing sort it out. But so those are the things that will decide this ultimately, who gets player of the year in volleyball.
Well, fans, let us know what you think. Inbox admin1 at svcsportzone.com. We've given the two Facebook options as well as Twitter. DBK offers so many things with the phone number there, 569-3254, as well as their comment box. So many ways to get involved. It's really great to see all of the volleyball participation every week. Looking ahead to future shows, we're still looking a couple weeks off from our transfer show. We've had a few more topics this week come in, but again, I love the idea of the volleyball topics, because I was just telling someone the other day, you go east of Cincinnati, you go south of Columbus, and Scioto Valley Conference volleyball is as good as it gets. You look at some of the non-league scores, and it's really not even close in a lot of situations. So, fans, please get involved. So until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for DBK Media Services, and for my co-host, Matt Combs, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.